United States judge nominees. Now, throughout the course of the evening, I'll introduce you to a few of the candidates, or the nominees that you see here behind me. But first, I want to introduce to you our next speaker. He needs little introduction, but he is one who is very passionate about this issue. He's a friend of mine. He's a friend of families all across this globe. Please help me welcome Dr. James Dobson.
Thank you, everybody. My goodness, what a warm reception. Thank you very much for inviting us back to Kentucky. It's a pleasure to see you all. I wish we were going to be here a little longer and have a chance to get acquainted with more of you. I don't want to go an inch further without introducing to you the chairlady of the National Day of Prayer, my beloved wife, Shirley, in whom I'm well pleased. Shirley, would you please stand? Shirley is a great lady, doing a great work. She's a little sassy, but that's okay. And we have now been married for 44 years, and I think it's going to work. So I do hope that you have a chance to get acquainted with her, and I look forward to meeting some of you myself. You know, I wish you could meet our whole family because we're just wonderful people. But anyway, we're delighted to be here and delighted to have a chance to participate in this very, very important evening. My goodness, I just cannot imagine anything more significant than what we're about to do. I want to welcome you and thank you for coming. Others have said that, but I also want to thank those who are participating in churches all across the country. For those that are watching on television or on the radio or through the webcast or Sky Angel or wherever it happens to be, this is a tremendous outpouring. It reflects what's going on and the angst that is there over this issue. And so we welcome you. I also want to welcome members of the press and the media. It's my understanding that there are 60 separate entities here, organizations that are represented. The media of the nation is here, and I'm glad you're here. We don't always get a fair hearing on our point of view, and you came tonight, and I hope tonight we will get a fair hearing because this is a message that needs to be heard. With that, yeah. Now, I have a grand total of 12 minutes left to talk to you, and I got so much to say. I've never been so full with things I need to say, and I'm going to really have to crash, and so I'm going to get right to it. Obviously, we're talking about unconstitutional, I think, inappropriate use of the filibuster to prevent these honorable men and women from serving on the court. It's not right. It's wrong. And I think this is one of the most significant issues we've ever faced as a nation, because the future of democracy and ordered liberty actually depends on the outcome of this struggle. Why? Because the issues that we care about and the values that are important to us are now threatened by the court system, and especially the United States Supreme Court. There is a majority on the Supreme Court that is, and you'll have to pardon me, but this is the way I see it, they're unelected and unaccountable and arrogant and imperious and determined to redesign the culture according to their own biases and values, and they're out of control. And I think they need to be reined in. And in that regard, I want it said loud and clear that I appreciate and agree with Majority Leader Tom DeLay and what he has been trying to do. He's had the courage to put his neck out, and he's being vilified and treated very, very unfairly, and I think it's time to get off his back. Now, let me go back to my own childhood. When I was 10 years of age, and I want to address something that Chuck Colson just said in the video, because when I was in the fourth grade, I was sitting in class. My teacher was Mrs. Eunice Harris. I remember her well, great teacher, and I was sitting right in the middle of the class, and I remember one day that she went to the board, and she put the three branches of government on the board. She wrote them down, the executive and the legislative and the judicial branches of government, and talked about what each one of them was designed to do in the Constitution and what the Founding Fathers had in mind. Then she went on to describe the fact that the Founding Fathers knew the nature of man. Those were the days when school kids were taught something a little different than they are now. And she talked about the fact that there is a tendency for all of us. We're all flawed individuals. The Founding Fathers knew that. And they set up a system to keep one branch of government from becoming too powerful and then overwhelming the other two. And they call it checks and balances. As a 10-year-old, I understood that. We can't seem to get it today, but we understood what checks and balances meant. And that meant that each branch of government checks the other two. Now, it works very well with regard to the executive branch and the legislative branch. They check each other. There's the veto, and then they can override the veto, and there's all kinds of struggles that go on back and forth between the executive and the legislative. But the Founding Fathers intended for those two branches of government to check the judiciary, and it hasn't done it and won't do it because it doesn't have the political gumption to do it, because the moment they do, the media rises up like a mighty shield to keep this from happening. As a result, what do you have? You have a court that is out of control. Did you know that the Constitution of the United States specifically gives the Congress the right to control the courts? Not that it's not independent, but the Constitution in Article 3, Section 1, says that below the Supreme Court, the courts of the United States serve at the pleasure of the Constitution. They have responsibility. And then, of course, by the confirmation process, they have the responsibility to have an impact on these courts. And they have not been willing to do that, and therefore we're lacking in checks and balances, and you have a court that is now imperious and is imposing its will on the people of this country. And that was never what was intended by the Founding Fathers. And it's why we must address that. I think it was Lord Acton who said that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So you have a court that has essentially absolute power. They are the final arbiter. In fact, that goes back to Thomas Jefferson, who was very concerned about the possibility that a court would get out of control like this and would destroy our ordered liberty. And after Marbury versus Madison, which is a decision that the court rendered on its own behalf in 1803, essentially said it had the right to make all decisions of a constitutional nature, both inside and outside the government. So by that decision, they put themselves in preeminence, and instead of having co-equal branches of government, you have one that is preeminent. And so Jefferson complained about that, and for 20 years he wrote about it, warning us of what could happen under those circumstances. I want to read you what he said. He said, "It is dangerous. It's a dangerous doctrine to consider judges as ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions." That's what we have today. "It is one which would place us under the despotism of an oligarchy." Did you hear that? An oligarchy. What's an oligarchy? It is a government by a few. That's what we have. Five black-robed justices on the Supreme Court can tell the rest of us and the other two branches of government how it's going to be, and there is no redress, and there's no second chance. There's no one else to appeal, and that's what is happening, and I am concerned about it. The Supreme Court, after all, is made up of men and women, flawed like you and me. They're not gods. They don't do everything right, as, you know, that's true of every single one of us. And the Supreme Court, through the years, has done some horrible things. They have, the Dred Scott decision in 1858, ruled that black people are not fully human, not entitled to a full vote, and so on. That decision rendered tremendous chaos and contributed in many ways to the Civil War that resulted in 600,000 deaths, the saddest period in American history. It came from the Supreme Court, essentially. And in 1973, the Roe v. Wade decision, the Supreme Court labored forth and came to us with the abortion, decision that all abortion is protected by the Constitution. And that has now resulted in 44 million deaths, the biggest Holocaust in world history that came out of the Supreme Court. I can't believe what's happening to that clock. I'm just getting started, and here I am, almost out of time. The problem with the court when it is not checked is that it has an agenda. For 43 years, the Supreme Court has been on a campaign to limit religious freedom, religious liberty. It goes back to 1962 with Bible reading, and 63, prayer in schools, both prohibited. And from there to your state, here in Kentucky, when the Ten Commandments could not be posted on the schools. That was 1980. In 1985, you couldn't even let kids meditate as a group in school. And then you couldn't pray at football games and couldn't pray at graduation ceremonies. And then that ridiculous decision by the Ninth Circuit in 2002 with regard to the Pledge of Allegiance. Now listen, folks, every one of those decisions that I just quoted to you, every one of them is opposed today by more than 70% of the American people. Every one of them. Abraham Lincoln said at Gettysburg, this is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. We're the government. In what sense are we the government when what we care about has no impact, has no influence? How does that happen? And the reason is because the court is not accountable to the people. Now, what's the connection with the filibuster? Listen carefully, folks. The ballot box is our only means of affecting the court. It's the only way that we can influence the makeup of the court. If this is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, we have to have a way to let our concerns be known. And that is done through the people that we elect. And we did that on November the 2nd of last year. And we sent... We sent a message to Washington that there was a concern over the judiciary. It was talked about often during the campaign. And yet now a minority of members of the Senate, the Democrats essentially, and about six or eight very squishy Republicans, are determined to prevent that influence to be felt on the court. Now, what Chuck Colson said is true. We're not trying to force our views on anybody. Folks, you can't even make somebody else's dog do what you want them to do. You can't force anybody to do anything. But we do have a right to participate in this great representative form of government. Thank you. I have to stop, but where is this leading? Where does it go? It goes directly to the redefinition of marriage. The court's already made that clear. That's what they plan to do. It goes to further assaults on the sanctity of life. Bless her heart, Terri Schiavo, a mentally disabled woman, unable to speak for herself, with circumstances that are not clear around her, her illness, her difficulty, was turned down 4 times by this Supreme Court. They would not even review her case. Do they care about the sanctity of life? I think not, and they've made that very clear. Euthanasia is on their list of things to deal with. And pornography, unchecked and unlimited, on and on it goes, plus this matter of judicial tyranny to people of faith. And that has to stop. I leave you with this. Please do call your senator, both of them. Call them. Let them know that you won't take no for an answer. Let them know that you don't want them to delay, and you don't want them to postpone, and you don't want them to tremble. Republicans are real good at trembling. Get a hold of them and tell them that you care and that you will remember how they vote. It's all on the line, and it's time to stop the filibuster. And speaking of time, I'm out of it and out of breath. I'm gone. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Dobson. The history is quite clear, and the history is they have been filibustering in an unprecedented way these judicial nominees to the important appellate court level. And you'll see across your screen tonight there are names and phone numbers. Those senators in particular need to hear from you. And I want you to write down that phone number and, again, promise me in the morning you will call them before you have your first cup of coffee. Now, also, if you're